What's happening, everybody? Welcome to episode 2 of the Two Dudes Reviews podcast. I'm Mike, he's Dave.
What's up, everybody?
To get the formalities out of the way, you can visit us at twodudes140reviews.tumblr.com. That's the number 2 and the number 140. You can also follow and interact with us on Twitter at twodudes140review. Again, those are the numbers. If you could just use the hashtag 2DR, that would help us out a lot. You can also like us on Facebook. Just go to our website, click on that link to like us. And also, please, if you enjoy our podcast, go ahead and give us a rating and also leave us a comment in iTunes. We would appreciate it. And if you haven't hit that subscribe button yet, you can go ahead and do that now. If you're listening to us for the first time, welcome. And those tuning in again, you know us. We write Twitter-style 140-ish character reviews about movies, video games, television, and pretty much any entertainment we can get our hands on. Last week was our inaugural podcast where we focused on the Xbox One reveal, but today we're going to start with our original planned podcast format where we focus on our recent reviews, entertainment industry news, and some upcoming movie and video game releases. We have a lot to get to, so let's get started. We're going to focus on 3 reviews this week. One is on a video game. Another one is on a television show and a movie. But our first review is Battle Block Theater. Both Dave and I had a chance to play this. He and I played the multiplayer version of Battle Block Theater. We didn't really get into the co-op campaign. But what did you think of the Battle Block Theater when we had a chance to play it?
The multiplayer on this game was so much fun. There was so many different things that you could do in this game. And there's so much competition in this game. Like, you don't see it until you actually get your hands on it it's either going to – the co-op is either going to make friends or the versus is going to break friendships.
Oh, it does. I mean, and if you're not familiar with Battle Block Theater, it's – what is it? It's a game from Behemoth. They created Castle Crashers, and I believe it's Alien Hominid. They're both Xbox Live games that eventually ported over to PS3. I'm sure eventually Battle Block Theater will go over to the PS3 or PS4 at some point. But yeah, if you're not familiar with it, it's a pretty humorous game. You're a bunch of these shape-based characters that have to go... you're betrayed by your leader, Hattie Haddington, and you have to go collect gems in order to release prisoners from this island that's being guarded by cats. And I've played a little bit of the single – I played a lot of the single-player campaign. I'm only a couple chapters away from completing the game. But it's pretty fun. It's fun collecting all the characters and seeing all the different models. I know we had fun with just creating – couple of our characters to play against each other in the multiplayer, but it's a very entertaining game, and the Behemoth did a really good job with the art style and the gameplay. It's a fun puzzle 2D platformer that I'll probably be playing for a long time over and over again just to play all the characters and do the puzzles different ways. But what did we play? We played like a basketball game. We played like Capture the Horse. It was just a version of Capture the Flag.
Yeah, and played a version of King of the Mountain or King of the Hill, where you have to get the most amount of time standing on the gold blocks. That gets pretty violent. and it's so creative. They come up with such different worlds to entertain you in such a small area. They don't make them too big so that you don't get thrown into the world with each other. And it's something that I could see that just in the multiplayer alone, if you have somebody that you're going to be able to play with or play across online, like, you're going to be into that game for a very long time if you ever get bored with it at all.
Right. And I think the funnest part for me was like just the characters that you could make and the different things that you could do with them, with the different combat and the different weapons that you can get. And that's one of the things that I didn't get too far in getting all the weapons. I have about 5 or 6 of them now, and they're pretty cool. Like, there's one I have now that's a sticky dart. So it actually helps you if you use it. You can actually use it as a platform to get up to a level that you may not reach by just jumping. So it's pretty helpful. There's also like a fan that you can use to blow dudes off, ledges, and One of the other ones I got was a fireball I can shoot out that kind of, you know, it burns everybody in the immediate area. But the one of the flaws that I saw in the game, I don't know if you noticed it as well, but the combat's kind of like, it's tricky a little bit, because sometimes when you do want to do a certain thing, like one of those big uppercut punches, that it was kind of, you had to do it almost, it was kind of touchy. If you didn't do it right, you know, you might not have performed the move correctly. So I don't know if you noticed that as well.
Yeah, they base the combat off of a single button with a direction based off of the direction on one of the analog sticks. And it's, if you're just a hair off, it's going to register you in the different direction, and it's going to make you doing a move that's going to, you weren't planning on doing, and it's going to throw off your game, because that uppercut is huge. And if you're just, like I said, if you're just a hair off, you're going to be doing a move that you don't intend to do, and you're going to lose points, you're going to lose time, and I've lost the game a couple times.
Right. Yeah, just because of that. And what I find that the Behemoth is doing really cool is that they're, because the point of the game is to release prisoners from this island, and they do it on different types of shapes. So you have like a square shape, triangle, an oval shape. You have to get all these different shapes. And what I really like what they're doing is that they are releasing a custom character that they're developing, which helps you. You have to go play community-based maps, because they have a level editor in the game, which is very cool and it's very intuitive. So you have to go play these community-based maps in order to unlock these characters that they're releasing. Like this week, for the next 2 weeks, is a lava lamp-shaped character that you can get. I think that that's really interesting, because I've played a few of these community-based maps, because there's also an achievement that you have to play at least 10 of them and give them a rating, that I find it really cool that they're doing that as well, because they're almost limited edition characters, because after the 2 weeks they just go back into some sort of, they call it a vault, and you know, maybe they'll bring them back, maybe they won't. So you really have to play the game if you want to get these cool shaped characters that they have. So I think they're doing a really good job of getting the community involved as well, and using their creativity. It's a really cool game. So the review that I put up on the site last week, it's a brilliant in every way. The Behemoth delivers again with a massive, creative, and entertaining 2D platformer. Co-op and multiplayer modes provide endless enjoyment. So that's our review for Battle Block Theater on our site. The next one we're going to get to is a show called Orphan Black, which I have no idea what this is about. You were on Twitter a lot when this show was on and talking about it, and I had you put like the horse hashtag Orphan Black, and it was just like, I have no idea what you were talking about. So I don't know if a lot of people know what the show is. It's on, I think, BBC America.
Yep. It was on BBC America. It was its first season. Started at the end of March, ran for 10 straight weeks, didn't take a break. And this show was absolutely incredible. What I thought, you know, usually I've started watching more BBC America shows. I haven't really watched a lot of them, and this show I caught on my radar, and it was something I hadn't really seen before. I mean, it was when they advertised it. You know, it's about clones. It's about it's about this, basically it's one girl, but it's a lot of the same person who she's a clone, and she doesn't know that there's others out there like her, and she gets thrown into this world where she starts to find these people, and they're all trying to figure out where they came from and what all the science is behind it. And it's really interesting, but it's also, it gets really dark. Because there's a lot of theoretical science behind it, and stuff that when you look at it, you're like, this might actually be something that might be possible, that they could be cooking up in a lab somewhere. But it's just, it's such a great show that they never slowed down during the show. Like each week, you know, usually when a show comes out, you'll get hit with a first episode. It'll be hard hitting, and it'll reel you in, and your next couple episodes will be pretty good. And then you'll have a mid-season lull, and then they'll hit you pretty hard at the end of the season and leave you with a cliffhanger. The show didn't really do that. It just it hit the ground running and it kept going, and it was just so impressive.
Nice. So you said it's about cloning, because when I first saw your review of this, and I never watched the show, I just saw what you were talking about on Twitter, and it's just I didn't know if it was almost she was like schizophrenic or had some sort of multiple personality disorder. Because when you were talking about it, I looked it up on BBC America's website, and I was kind of looking at it. I didn't really get that too in depth with it, but I didn't, you know, I didn't know what type of, you know, character this was, but you know, the human cloning thing. So it's almost like I think about it, it's like that one, is it kind of like that Michael Keaton movie, was it Multiplicity?
Multiplicity. Yeah, it kind of is, but it's none of them are the same, and that's what makes the show so interesting, is that when she meets these other characters that are basically her and she's interacting with herself, this actress Tatiana Maslany, she's interacting with herself, and but it's always someone different. Like there's a soccer mom version of her, there's this Russian Ukrainian assassin version of her, there's this kind of hipster scientist version of her, and there's a cop version of her. It's she gets she plays so many different characters that are all clones of herself. I think by the time this show ends, that she in across the entire season she will have played 7 different characters in the first season, and it's just it's she really impresses with the way that she does it, because she adds something new that makes it seem like it's a different character each time, especially when she's interacting, because she has to talk to basically herself in a lot of these scenes, and it really never feels like it's just cutting from her in one outfit to her in another outfit. It really feels like 2 different characters. And so it's not, although it kind of sounds like, you know, Eddie Murphy sitting around the dinner table in fat suits, just putting on a different voice. It's really not. It's like, it feels like a cast of people just all played by one person. And I just thought the season was great.
Were they always introducing like a new character? Was it like one an episode, or do you think like, it's going to be limitless as they go forward, or
they didn't introduce a new one every episode. They got to a point where they had their main cast, I would say, just a couple of episodes into this season, and then the in case anybody's holding out for a spoiler alert, they introduce one more toward like at the end of the season. So just when they think they have all these 6, 7, or 8 people that they're studying and that they're trying to find out all the genes and all the science behind this and what they're all being cloned for, she gets introduced to there's one more, and it kind of throws the curveball at you, like, hey, there's it could be limitless, because just when you thought you knew how many there were, there's another one, and that could just go on. So I'm interested in it. I'm going to keep watching when the next season rolls around next spring.
Okay. Yeah, so the review that you put up on the site was fast-paced and unflinching. It rarely misses a mark. With so much that impresses, it's Maslany's multi-character performance that truly shines. So, yeah, it's definitely probably a show that everybody should start checking out. I know BBC America seems to be putting out a lot of excellent television lately.
Yeah. I've been watching a couple of shows on it. This one, I mean, I watched what else was on BBC America? I mean, I'm not really in too much to. I know a lot of people are into Doctor Who. I really haven't gotten into Doctor Who, but that's been kind of their workhorse.
What's the other one? Downtown Abbey or Downton Abbey or something like that.
Downton Abbey, yeah, I think they're actually showing that on PBS now.
Oh, that's not BBC. All right, there we go.
I feel stupid now. No, I think they're actually putting it on PBS. I mean, Chris Hardwick's got a talk show on there. The Nerdist has a talk show on there.
Right.
There's a show called Copper that's coming up with second season, and then of course, Top Gear. I mean,
yeah. Right, right.
Top Gear is just awesome.
Well, just the sprite line we talk about. I just got into the show. I never, really watch the show, and I've only watched like 3 or 4 episodes now, but that show is awesome. I'll probably want to catch up on not every season, because I'm not going to go back 18 years, but you know, I'm definitely going to catch up on the last 3 or 4 season and keep an eye on it. But the next review that we have is The Impossible. It's out now on DVD. It's not available on streaming on Netflix or anything like that. It's definitely a rental. What it's about a true story of a British family that actually lives in Japan, that lived in Japan and was visiting Indonesia on a holiday. And it's their story about how a survival story of the 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami. And I tell you, this movie is very intense. It felt real watching it. It felt like you were there. And I know sometimes there's a lot of this, you know, it's when things like that happen across the world, it's on the news. You're not really impacted by it, but you're following it. But it's one of those things that it's across the other side of the world. It even happens when you're not impacted by something that even happens here. That it's news, you feel sorry about it, and you know, but it doesn't really get to you. When you watch this movie, you know, you're going to feel the devastation of that tsunami, because the director on this, he's a Spanish director. I think it's Jose Bayona. I think that's how you say his name. They did a phenomenal job of recreating this tsunami. You know, I know when I was reading about it on IMDb, a couple of the notes that it's actually a scaled down model, and but they did an excellent job, and there's points in the parts in the film that are, and when you watch it, you just have to be careful, because it is very graphic. It is very gruesome, because they are showing the real effects of what happened then. So I'm sure, you know, as a movie, a true movie based on a true story, it's probably embellished a little bit. But you know, it's, you will feel it when you watch this movie, because I was literally sitting there, like, almost when things were happening, gasping for air, that I wanted, like, almost to help the characters when this was happening. So it has Naomi Watts in it, who was nominated last year for for an Academy Award for Best Actress, which was well deserving. Also, Ewan McGregor's in it, and there's terrific acting by their sons in the film, and the oldest son. Was played by an actor. I forget his first name. I know his last name is Holland. He's 16 years old. He was terrific in the film. And I'm kind of shocked that this film didn't get nominated for Best Picture. It wasn't one of the 10 that were in for the Best Picture last year. It should have been. But it was a pretty incredible film, because you know, you don't realize the devastation until you see it like that. And even though it's not real footage, you can feel it. It was really intense, that film. So I would definitely have everybody check the movie out. But you know, I don't know. It's just, how do you feel about like movies when you see like that are, you know, that are based on true stories and you know about the facts, but you kind of feel removed from it, so it doesn't really hit you?
I think it needs to be, if you're going to go into that type of movie, you have to almost do it perfectly. Like, you're basically under a microscope when you do this kind of movie, because everybody knows the facts, everybody knows what happens. If you're gonna put a story into a movie like this, then the surrounding events, people are still going to scrutinize that really strictly, and if somebody can pull this off like The Impossible was done, then you know, bravo. but I mean, sometimes things can go wrong.
Right.
And you know, you can make a bad tragedy movie, no matter how heartfelt you try to make the story. Right. You can really screw things up if you mess up the actual tragedy that happened.
Right. And that was some of the criticism that I read about the film afterwards. Cause I'm one of those guys that when I watch movies, I like to do a little bit of research about the film, especially movies I really like, and get more information about it. That there was a little bit of criticism that there wasn't a focus, or they what there wasn't a lot of acknowledgement of the other people that were a part of the tragedy, a lot of the people that lived there, you know, year round, that weren't just on vacation. Because a lot of the focus of the film and a lot of where the direction of the film was based on this family, but also it looks like it also had a lot of the vacationers issues. It didn't have a lot of what that people that lived there as their homeland about what happened to them. There was, you know, they were kind of in the background. So I know that was kind of some criticism of the film, that there wasn't more of the impact on them as well. It was, you know, when they showed impacts to other families and stuff, that it was vacationers. It wasn't really what happened to the people that actually lived there and call that country home. But, you know, but otherwise they did it real well. And Naomi Watts was phenomenal. I mean, it was such a brutally demanding, you know, emotionally and physically, that you could just tell on her, because for the majority of the film, you know, after it happens, she's injured pretty badly. And they don't hold back as far as, you know, what happens to her physically. They show everything, you know, they're it's pretty graphic about what they show, and what happens and how this family survives. But as far as my review for the movie goes, it's very good. It's an intense and riveting story of survival. Bayona recreates the punishing and deadly tsunami in a visually impressive and gut-wrenching fashion. Watts' extraordinary but Holland's heroic performance is captivating. So I would highly recommend everybody go out and rent this film. You're going to enjoy it. You know, it's you know, it's emotional, but it's also very well done. And it's one of those few disaster films that you actually can feel what's happening to these people because of how well it's, you know, how visually impressive it is and how well they capture the emotion of each of these characters. So that's it for our reviews this week that we're going to go over. Now I know Dave has some industry news that he wants to go over and tell us about.
All right. Yep. A lot of things have happened in the industries, different industries across all of across the board that we look at this week. First and foremost in gaming, follow up to what we were talking about last week. Guess we got our answer already. In a report with MPFirst.com, the CEO of Take-Two, who distributes the GTA series, said in an interview that GTA 5 is not going to be on next-gen consoles. So wow. PS4 and Xbox One will not be getting GTA 5. Take-Two, CEO of Take-Two, does not think this is going to affect sales. I tend to agree with them. I think people are going to follow GTA. What do you think?
No, I think so. I think they're going to fall. You know, and I think it's not going to affect their sales at all. You know, GTA is such a huge brand, and Rockstar does such a great job with developing the game, and it's so huge. And this is supposedly the biggest map that they've ever created for GTA. I don't think it's going to affect them at all. I do think it's going to cause an issue for those that want to buy a next-gen console as soon as the launch comes out. You know, I think that that's going to affect them, because if they need to trade in their console for one of the next gens, because, you know, for monetary reasons or anything like that, they're not going to be able to afford it on without a trade-in. I think it's going to maybe impact those people if they don't have a second console in their home, but it's not going to impact GTA at all. I think it's just going to be so huge that, you know, they're not going to see any dip in sales. It's probably even going to break records of any previous GTA that they've ever had.
Yeah, if anything, it's going to affect sales on PS4 and Xbox One.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think Rockstar
see it affecting GTA, though, or Rockstar.
Yeah, Rockstar don't give a shit.
No.
Yeah, so I think they'll be fine. I, for one, am going to be hanging on to my PS3 whenever I get it back.
I'm going to play the shit out of the game.
Yeah, and I'm going to be getting GTA 5. It's going to be several months until I want to pick up a PS4 or an Xbox One if they wow me. Definitely gave me enough time to play GTA 5 into the ground. So yeah, I don't foresee that being a problem for myself, and probably a lot of people are going to be doing the same thing with that anyway.
Yep.
And that I think speaking of sales actually takes us to our next little blurb of industry news in the gaming world. There's been some news coming out about next generation system pricing for the PS4 and Xbox One. Industry analyst Michael Pachter, he's been predicting that the pricing for the PS4 will be going for $349, whereas the Xbox One is going to top that at $399. Pretty much every site that we've looked at hasn't given this anything more than a "hey, guess what this guy said" kind of article, because this guy has, I mean, he can quote certain chipsets and pricing models, but the fact of the matter is we don't know what Sony and Xbox and Microsoft are doing right now. We don't know what kind of subsidies they're going to be having or what they're going to be using to price their systems, as well as this guy has been predicting pricing on previous consoles as well, and people have pointed out that he's been wrong on almost all accounts. So while he's saying $349 for the PS4 and $399 for the Xbox One, general consensus is don't go try to pre-order it for that much and expect it to stay there.
Right. Yeah, I think you can probably add probably $100, $150 to that. I don't think this dude's right at all, to be honest with you. I think, you know, because when the PS3 came out, what was it, $399?
Yeah, I think when PS3 came out, might have even been $499. I think there were actually maybe even two models that had come out where they came out at different prices. I don't know if because a lot of the information on PS4, when you look at their hardware, is kind of to be determined as far as storage capacity for their internal hard drive. Right. So we don't know if they're going to do a whole 500 gigabyte for $499, 1 terabyte for $699, that kind of thing, or if there's just going to be one model, one price. So yeah, I think this prediction might be somebody that's walking into a pawn shop trying to lowball somebody.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't get anybody's hopes up if that's going to be the price, because if that's the case, they're not much more than what they were almost before they lowered prices on the current models. They're not that much higher than that, which doesn't seem right to me. You'd think that they're going to start these off pretty high. And I don't think that, I know Microsoft is subsidizing the current 360 for $99 if you do 2 years of live, but I don't think they're going to do that at first. I think eventually, I think it depends on how sales go at first and over the first 6 months, And just to go back to the GTA 5 thing, is that, you know, if they're, I don't know how much that'll put a dent in any of their launch sales. You know, if people have to use those as a trade-in to get a new model, to get the new next-gen consoles, I don't know how that's going to affect them, you know, launch-wise, because I don't know how much maybe a middle-class or lower-income family would be able to drop down that much money. Unless they use that as just, you know, some families use big holiday, you know, their one big family gift is going to be this, who knows, but yeah. I don't know how much it'll impact them, you know, sales wise, if people can't trade in to upgrade. I'm curious to see if that'll impact them at all. To see if people don't have, cause maybe some people do have second, you know, boxes in their house that they're not playing or they're not connected to the internet that they can just go and trade in. But I don't know how many people that really is.
Yeah. And I don't know how big of a market that makes up. I know myself, I probably will end up needing to trade in the PS3 to buy a PS4, depending on how much they're going to be, especially if they're not this $349. Right. And that, and who knows, maybe if Sony and Microsoft see, you know, GTA and a couple of these EA sports games that aren't going to be released on their next gen consoles as a threat to their launch sales, maybe they do find a way to issue to send out these first run systems at a lower price than what they expected and decide to take a loss on the price. But that Sony has. Sony's already said, which I'm sure they could change their mind before launch, but they've already said that they don't plan to take a loss on their system. So
right.
I don't see them selling it for $350 and that being not taking a loss on, right. especially the hardware that they've said they've gotten in.
Yeah, so hopefully find out next week at E3 if they. Hopefully they'll give us prices. Hopefully they'll give us definite launch dates as well. So hopefully find out about all this stuff and, you know, next week at E3. That would be certainly nice if they do and not. You know, dance around those questions.
Hopefully we see the console E3.
I would think you're going to see the PS4 one. If they don't do it at E3, then I don't know what the fuck they're doing. So.
Yeah. Somebody will drop the ball. If they go into the summer after the big release and the big expo and they've got nothing, that would be terrible. That would be a big ball drop right there.
Yeah, but I'm sure we'll see it. Hopefully we'll get the prices and launch dates as well.
Yeah. In gaming news, before I move on to movie news, fuck you for Sutherland.
Oh my god, you're gonna be bitter about this forever.
I just thought I'd get that in there. I'm still kind of flaming hot about the whole issue of David Hayter not being the voice of Big Boss in the upcoming Metal Gear 5. I understand that Big Boss is older now, and in Metal Gear 4, when he was in the scenes, he was much older and he wasn't voiced by David Hayter. But come on, just phoning it in with a celebrity that's known for killing people and he whispers in a soft, gruff voice, like... Come on, you're phoning it in with a celebrity just to get a cheap pop. Kiefer Sutherland is not my choice.
Dude's got a decent voice, and, you know, you ever watch that movie, Phone Booth? Come on. Take Colin Farrell out of that movie, and Kiefer Sutherland.
It's just going to be Phone Booth.
You're right. There you go. That's all you need.
All right. Big movie news this week. Pretty much everybody that's into... superhero movies. This week, Joss Whedon has come out and told the Daily Beast that if Disney has not signed a new agreement with Robert Downey Jr. to re-up his contract to be Iron Man Tony Stark, he will be out for the Avengers 2. He will not be directing Avengers 2 if Robert Downey Jr. is not Iron Man anymore.
Yeah, not surprising. I mean, I don't know. If you're Joss Whedon or any other director, do you really want to direct a film that has pretty much their star not in it or recast? That would just be a disaster.
Yeah, you know, I can't think
of another actor, you know, that could play Tony Stark as well as Robert Downey Jr. There's no, it just, you know, even when I watch some of the animated Iron Man with my son or whatever, the voice actor in that even sounds like Robert Downey Jr. I know it's not. But it has like the same attitude, and I don't think you could find anybody as, you know, as confident and or as like snarky as Robert Downey Jr. even comes off like, you know, he's almost a real life Tony Stark in a lot of things you see, you know, it's like that's just his personality. And I think I wouldn't blame Whedon or any other director that said absolutely not, I'm not directing Avengers 2 without Robert Downey Jr. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and I don't blame him. And like you said, it's almost like Robert Downey Jr. was destined to become rich and famous because he was supposed to become a real life Tony Stark.
Right.
That role and Robert Downey Jr. have become almost one person. They've almost become synonymous at this point, and it's. Right. And the only person that would probably take Avengers 2 without Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark would be Michael Bay, just so he can blow shit up. That's blow shit up for free. I don't care who's in the movie. Michael
right.
Bay.
That's funny.
So that'll be interesting to follow along and see what Disney decides to do with their property there. And, hopefully they can reel Robert Downey Jr. in and actually put out a decent Avengers 2 worth watching and not let it crumble.
Disney would be stupid not to, and I'm sure they're going to get pressure from Marvel too that, you know, we don't want to recast this at all. And it wouldn't make sense not to. And you know, when I actually heard about this, I thought he was already signed for Avengers 2. He just wasn't re-upped for any new Iron Man movies. So I'm surprised he's not even, you know, after how big Avengers was. I'm surprised that they didn't just re-sign every single cast member right away, for the next Avengers 2. So it'll be interesting. Hopefully they do sign him, and you know, I'm sure Robert Downey Jr. is going to want a lot of money, but he made them a lot of money, so they should really pay him.
Yeah, if I didn't think it was going to be Iron Man was going to be the problem. I thought after all the changes, it was probably going to be another Hulk. We haven't seen a Hulk be the same for two movies in a row yet. Right. So I didn't know if we were going to see another one with Mark Ruffalo. So hopefully they can get this sorted out.
Right. Yep. Let's. I hope they do. They should. If they don't, they're kind of dumb.
Yeah. All right. So that takes care of gaming and movies. And let's move on to basically the biggest thing, not just on television, but the biggest thing probably the world over this past week in television, HBO, Game of Thrones, The Red Wedding. This has been the topic of the week, from everything from compilation videos of reactions on YouTube to
late people night TV.
Yeah, people have already been on late night TV shows discussing this. The actors have done weird little Vine videos, right, with their reactions. I mean, this episode was huge. And for anybody that hadn't read the book, like, you just got blown away. Like, when you watch this episode, like, what was your reaction when you heard that music change and you saw Catelyn look up at Walter Frey and you realized what was about, like, something was about to happen? What was your reaction?
See, and that's the thing about it. It's funny because, you know, since I watched it on HBO Go, I'm about 15 minutes behind. I was following people. I was just reading Twitter at the time and I saw your reaction and I'm like, like, what the fuck is going to happen here? And it didn't even process in my mind because it's not something I even expected, you know, and I didn't realize something was going to happen until she looks over and I forget the guy's name. There's so many fucking characters in this show. I forget the guy's name that she lifted up his sleeve and saw the chainmail. I'm like, oh shit, shit's going down.
Yeah.
in this now. That's the first time I recognized what was going to happen. You know, not as brutal as it turned out to be, but you know, that's the moment I realized something's going down here. And you know, I don't know why it didn't process before that, but you know, I was shocked. You know, and I can't believe that happened. I can't believe that there was, you know, I guess three main characters really, you know, that, you know, die in the same episode. You know, which, you know, from, and it was funny. I almost, you know, what irritates me about it is the people that read the books, they almost had this elitist attitude on Twitter and the reaction videos. And it was almost they're Game of Thrones hipsters that, you know, they read the books. So it's like, you know, oh, what's the big deal? We knew this was coming and, you know, blah, blah. It's like, you know, shut the fuck up. You know, you can't tell me that that's not shocking even when you read the book, that's, you know, and to see it actually happen on television and the way it was done, because I don't think I've ever seen a more brutal and gruesome and graphic television ever. I can't think of anything. I think, you know, the only thing now that's really pushing the envelope on network television is Hannibal, probably, is the only thing that's probably the most graphic. But, and I know HBO is a different level, you know, because it's not TV, it's HBO. You know, it's something like that, but it, you know, I just didn't expect it, and it was the only thing that irritated me about the whole thing is these Game of Thrones hipsters that, oh, you know, this, we saw it, we knew this was coming. You know, go fuck yourself. No, but you know, probably 90% of the people that watch this show have never read the books, or like you that have read a couple of the books but never got this far.
Yeah, and that was my I was actually really surprised that I actually read the first two books and I hadn't got to the third book yet by the time the third season had started. So I hadn't gotten to this point yet. And surprising that no one had actually spoiled this for me
Oh, absolutely.
when I watched the show, that I had this real natural gut-wrenching reaction where I was almost to the point of like I was almost to the point of tears. Like I was out of breath by the end of that episode,
Yeah.
and it was it like I couldn't even form words for a couple of minutes because it was just it was that good. But at the same time, personally, with my opinion of the show and the people that I'm kind of like rooting for in the show,
Right.
I was so pissed off.
Right.
Like I got that natural pissed off feeling that like yeah, the phrase are gonna get it. Like so, but
But from
yeah.
who? That's the who. Who's gonna get them? You know, and you think about it. I mean, we'll probably, we'll talk a little bit about what we're gonna do with Game of Thrones a little bit later and go in depth, when we do our special. But I don't know. I don't see how can this finale top that episode as far as being shocking and being, as powerful as that last 10, 15 minutes was. I don't know if they can do it. I mean, something major has to happen in this finale to even top that, to not make that episode the finale.
Yeah, I'm gonna steal a I'm gonna steal kind of a quote from Walking Dead fans that feel this way about Norman Reedus's character Daryl Dixon. If Jaime Lannister dies, we riot.
Oh, absolutely.
If after the North and the Starks are left pretty much kingless at this point, everybody in the Stark family is either a child or a bastard at this point, and they've turned the Jaime Lannister's character around to the point where he's actually a good guy and you want to root for him. If he gets killed off in this season, we riot.
Right. Yeah, I agree. There's only a few that, I was always one of those that loved Sean Bean's character. I was a big fan of Ned Stark. He was like the one that really, because I was a late to the show. I didn't watch the show or I didn't really hear about the show until almost when season two started, and I kind of binged on season one through it, and I was pissed off when Ned Stark would died. I was just like that he was. Because this type of show and this type of setting is really not something that I typically would, get drawn into. It's not something that typically fits what I watch. But, he's the one that actually, his character got me into the show. And how everything, and I was just pissed off by that. So this even doubles how angry I was at, which makes me think that everybody's gonna fucking die at the end of the show, and there's gonna be one tool left standing. I can't even remember his name. That creep in, the King's Landing. But it's like that's the only guy that's gonna be left, and I'm gonna be pissed off.
And that's and I actually have been seeing a lot of people talk about like kind of some kind of like, and we'll talk about this later, but there's been people that have been talking about the foreshadowing in an earlier episode where Theon Greyjoy is getting tortured
Right.
and he's trying to guess like where he is, and the boy that comes the boy that's torturing him, the guy that's torturing him, gets in real close to his face and says, "If you think this has a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention."
Right.
And like that, like when people were taught, like referencing that towards this past episode and the entire show as a whole, like I almost got goosebumps, and I realized this is going to be one of those shows where there's going to be one person left on the throne, but the entire Westeros is probably going to be in flames, and that person's going to have the throne. They're basically just going to be crying because everyone's going to be dead, and they just get the throne by default. Like it's not going to
Right,
have a
right.
happy ending.
Yeah, so we'll have to see what happens, and we'll talk about a little bit before we leave what we're going to do with Game of Thrones this weekend and next week. But that's it for our news today. What's coming? We'll talk about the releases coming up. What comes out today in movies? We have the comedy starring the duo from Wedding Crashers. They're back together, Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. That comes out today. They get an internship at Google. So the clips look pretty funny. And I know Wedding Crashers is one of your favorites, one of mine. I hope they can kind of duplicate that a little bit with the internship. I'm kind of on the fence that they're be able to do that. But some of the clips that I've seen are pretty funny. Another one is The Purge that comes out today. You actually talked about this. You're the first person that I had talked about or saw anywhere that talked about The Purge when you saw the teaser trailer for it. So that, you know, now they're heavily promoting it with television commercials and with online advertising as well. But that has Ethan Hawke and Lena Headey from Game of Thrones. They're the stars of that film. Looks pretty interesting. I think, what is it about? It's kind of a science fiction thriller where they for 12 hours, every crime is legal.
Yeah, every crime, including murder, is legal. And they tie in this whole, there's no other crime after this. There's no, the unemployment is down. Poverty is basically gone. There's no homeless people. And it's all because for 12 hours once a year, they just allow people to just run crazy, get out there, basically purge their need to commit crimes. And then for the rest of the year, they get to be productive members of society. And
plan until the next year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so we'll have to see how that does. And the other major release that comes out this week is Much Ado About Nothing, which is directed by Joss Whedon. I do that every fucking time. It's his modern take on the Shakespeare play, Much Ado About Nothing. I think it has Nathan Fillion in it. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
He's in that movie. And then next week on the 12th is the apocalyptic comedy This Is the End. It stars James Franco, Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, and pretty much a cast of thousands. I know Emma Watson's in it as well. Danny McBride is in it, and there's a bunch of people are in it, and they're all play themselves and they're at this party all together, and it's as the world is ending. So we'll have to see how that is. Looks interesting. Some of the trailers that I've seen of it look interesting, but who knows? It could be just one of those, you know, shitty comedies that come out every once in a while. They're, you know, with a bunch of these Judd Apatow dudes.
Yeah, James Franco getting high pretty much is going to be the movie.
Right, exactly. And as far as video games, there were two, but now there's only one. Coming out on June 9th, Animal Crossing New Leaf for the 3DS, whoever the fuck plays that anymore. I know Animal Crossing is a popular game, but really, yeah. Who gives a shit about the 3DS? that's not, you know, you might as well just play on your phone. And it was supposed to come out on June 11th. SimCity was supposed to come out for Mac. They were releasing the Mac version of SimCity, but they actually came out today earlier. EA and Maxis announced that they are pushing that back till August. Surprise, surprise. after the PC disaster, I'm not really shocked that they couldn't come out with a Mac release for it. They said that there was, it was a tough decision, but it just wasn't ready for major release, which doesn't shock me after all the trouble the PC version had, and was only been a couple months since it's been released, right?
Yeah.
And they're already, and they talked about in this announcement today that they're doing patch number 5 already, which just is absolutely ridiculous for a new release game, but that's EA for you.
Yeah, and that would have been, it would have been a fiasco if they would have released a Mac version and had the same problems as the PC version. Like, it would have been just, EA would have had a public relations nightmare. And EA's he's getting a bad reputation to begin with, and it looks like it's just sinking further and further. I wouldn't be surprised if EA gets any sort of, it's supposed to come out so soon, and they have, and they pushed it back, if they get any sort of, financial setback for this, they're just going to put out some sort of microtransaction to make up for it anyway. So
yeah,
they don't care. They don't.
Yeah, it just sucks for the people that, you know, were looking forward to the Mac release and they pre-ordered it or something like that, and now they have to wait till August to actually maybe get their hands on it at that point. Who knows if they'll push it back even further, but you would think that they would have, you know, worked hard on getting a Mac version out because, you know, I know it's a very popular game on, you know, PC and also on Macs. I know it was one of the few games that was always on Mac before Mac got more gaming, you know, more gaming titles. So I know that was, but we'll have to see how that goes. Hopefully they do it right and they fix it and, you know, and they don't come out with a freaking disaster like the PC version. But yeah. That's it for video game and movie releases for this week. Next week comes out The Last of Us, which is getting pretty much tens everywhere except for a couple mixed reviews like Polygon and such, but it's pretty much getting tens and that comes out next week, but so we'll mention that next week as well.
Yeah, pretty much right now Metacritic's got that at a 96 out of 100 off of 57 critic reviews. That's insane. 28 of those reviews rank it at a perfect score. So that's almost half of the reviews on this site have it ranked perfectly, and all of them are positive if they aren't perfect. So if you get a chance to get into a GameStop before next week's podcast comes out, you better pick that up because it's going to be huge.
Right. Yeah. So we'll mention that again next week as a release that comes out. It's a weird that coming out on a Friday. All usually the games come out on Tuesday. It's a weird release date for the 14th on a Friday for a video game. But that's it for our podcast today. We do have a couple things coming up this weekend. The Game of Thrones finale is on Sunday at 9 Eastern. Dave is actually going to live tweet it, the finale from our Two Dudes review account on Twitter. So definitely interact with Dave and, you know, shoot him a comment and tell him what your reaction is to the finale. And, you know, you do that. We're going to tape our podcast, our special podcast on the Game of Thrones season 3. We'll go throughout the entire season and give our take on what happened in the finale. Talk a little bit more about the Red Wedding and our reactions to that as well. And see how that goes, and you know, you interact with us and tell us what your take is on Game of Thrones, the finale and the season. We'll maybe read a few of your tweets on our podcast as well. So we're going to do that on Sunday, 9 Eastern. You know, if you live in Pacific time, sorry, you know, you shouldn't live out there. You should live on the East Coast. So, you know, definitely interact with Dave on Sunday, through our Twitter account. And then we'll do a podcast right after, and that should post on Monday. But that's everything that we have for our podcast this week. Please give us, you know, if you're subscribing to us on iTunes, listening to us, give us a rating, leave us a comment, let us know what you like, what you dislike, how we can improve. Also, just leave us a comment, on Twitter, Facebook, on our Tumblr site as well. You know, tell us what you think of our reviews, if you've seen the movies, if you have any questions for us, if you also want, you know, if you have anything that you want us to review, we can do that as well. We're always open to that. Doesn't matter what it is. Just let us know what you want us to review. If you curious before you waste some money on a movie or something like that, you know, we can always check it out first and see how that goes. But next week.
Yeah, don't hesitate. I would absolutely hate to watch movies and play video games. So don't hesitate to let us know what you want us to do.
Yeah, but next week I'll have the review. I'm going to go see Star Trek Into Darkness this weekend. So next week I'll have a review of that as well. And there is like two mobile games that I'm playing right now, you know, that I'll have reviews up next week as well. And I'm also going to watch The Words. I just got that today from Netflix, so I will watch that at some point soon as well. So that's it for us this week. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, Sunday, you know, follow our Twitter account. Dave will be live tweeting. And until next week, we will talk to you then. And cheers, and we'll talk soon.
See you later, everybody.